Well, Ben, a tough loss. No way to slice it otherwise. 4-3, the Blue Jays fall. It's weird to think that on this 7-game road trip, the Jays are coming home with a record of 5-2 in those 7 games. And of course, in a vacuum, I think you take that. But of course, we do not live in a vacuum. And as such, it feels like a disappointment based on certainly the way this one ended. Ultimately, it's crazy to look at it like this, but ultimately the Jays gave up a total over 4 games, 6 runs, and they left Cleveland with a 2-2 series split. Like, that is, for a team below 500 like the Guardians, for a team that outside of, and I'm not here to like denigrate one particular team, but for a team that had been scuffling for a long period of time for basically the entire season in a relatively soft division, I think a lot of people expected a lot more over a 4-game set. And between the rookies pitching in the first 3 games of the series, and then of course the offense certainly not showing up, again, 6 runs over those 4 games, it's a disappointment. No way to look at it.
Yeah, I think so. And we were talking about it a bit during the game. I do think, and this isn't to excuse what happened, they should do better than split a series in Cleveland. But it's kind of like, if you get a hit in your first at bat and then you go 1-for-4, you're mad. But if you get a hit in your last at bat after being 0-for-3, you're like, all right, well, I salvaged a pretty solid day.
Right.
If the Blue Jays had taken 2-of-3, let's say Reese McGuire doesn't make an unthinkable base running play, and they take 2-of-3 from Boston, and then they take 3-of-4 from Cleveland, I think people are calling in pretty happy today. And that's not to say that people shouldn't be unhappy about things that happened today. But it is kind of funny when you zoom out on that. Like, at the end of the day, they did play pretty well. They're a team that's had, on the road trip as a whole,
right,
they're a team that's had issues, I think, sustaining long win streaks. Their longest win streak of the season, 6, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, they should have found a way to win today, because some of the teams behind them, even if they haven't played as consistently well as the Blue Jays, who win a lot of the series they play in, have built up bigger streaks, like the Seattle Mariners right now, who have won 7 in a row, but at least for the Blue Jays, play Baltimore next. So it'll be interesting one way or another.
That is Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Welcome to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network, streaming live on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Taking your calls and text. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590 is where you can text us. Name and location, please. That is the people's text line, and it is always open. And a number of texts, Ben, about George Springer, and I want to read you a couple of these. Mark, actually 2 Marks. We got a Mark from Tilbury and Mark from Thorold. Mark from Tilbury saying, let's not pin this on Springer. We had another game of anemic offense. It's a team sport. Very few are contributing. If I wanted to watch a laughingstock, I'd go walk around a cornfield. That's actually pretty funny. but Mark from Thorold says, that time of the game, that pitch, way too close to take. George has got to try and swing at that and protect that play with 2 strikes. And like, that's kind of what Chris LaRue was getting at towards the end of the game, and then the kind of wrap up with Ben Wagner before we came on here. But you know, it's easily the most heated moment of the ball game by far. Of course, both George Springer and later on John Schneider, immediately afterwards, getting tossed by Jeremy Rehak. So Springer gets tossed on the low strike 3 call. You know, it's not the worst strike 3 call I've ever seen. Like, it's pretty borderline. Like, it's certainly, I do think it's a strike. I don't, get me wrong, I do believe it's a strike, but it's like right below the strike zone.
Yeah.
Like, it may have, maybe it grazes in a 3D object. Maybe it grazes the strike zone to a certain extent. So I'm always in favor, and I will always jaw about wanting robot umpires. You know my stance on robot umpires.
Yeah.
But I having said that, it's a borderline pitch that I'm not going to take too much umbrage with. The problem is for me is that he kind of, like, Rehak gave Springer a very quick toss. Like, Springer had already said his piece. I think part of your job as an umpire is to, you know, somewhat wear. I mean, like, you're going to be calling balls and strikes, so you kind of have to wear it from players to a certain extent. Yes, Springer was PO'd, but he like basically turned his back and walked away, and then he got ejected.
Yeah, it's hard to know because we don't know what was said, but Springer was walking back as he was saying stuff. It's one of those pitches where, yeah, I think a robot calls it a ball. I don't disagree, though, with Mark from Thorold that it's right on the borderline.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, for everyone who is watching the game on Sportsnet TV or any other TV, the strike box is just not the Bible. Like, it's not literally 100% what the strike zone is. I even heard recently that the strike box doesn't expand up and down from hitter to hitter, that it's just a set zone no matter what. So that, like, the same bottom of the zone for Alejandro Kirk and Aaron Judge, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But I think that it's a pitch in one way that, yeah, you could probably say maybe you should swing at that. There's two strikes. I think we saw, despite it not ending well, Kirk, two batters later, swung at a bunch of borderline pitches.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe one of them would have been ball four, but I think at least the thing you get taught when you're young is don't go down on called strike three there. Like, if you can tip it, and wait for either a big mistake out of the zone or a big mistake in the zone. So I see that point. And then, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's tough. It's tough to know what he said. So if the ejection was warranted,
yeah.
I really think you don't want George Springer getting tossed out in that spot.
Well, as we saw, they just did not have the bodies to appropriately adjust after that.
No, they literally had to go down to the last guy on the bench, and they want to, and like, I think rightfully so, they want to try and run for Brandon Belt there, because let's say Kirk's pop-up was hit a little bit deeper, all of a sudden there's a chance that Dalton Varsho would score, whereas, you know, Brandon Belt would have had no shot. You would have had to hit the ball very deep, and they didn't have a lot of those guys coming up. I don't think this whole game should be pinned on Springer.
No, certainly.
I agree with our first mark. But that doesn't, we don't live in like we don't live in a vacuum. We don't live in a world of complete like absolutes either. Partially, you can assign, you know, some blame here or there. And he was the best hitter this series for sure. I think he went 2-for-4. He had a double today. But it's unfortunate that regardless of even what happened in that seventh, that he doesn't get an opportunity to come up and hit in the ninth.
Yeah.
And instead the Blue Jays have to use Paul DeJong in that spot, when there's a chance that Paul DeJong would have been inserted. Like, you could have maybe had Paul DeJong inserted in the Nathan Lucas spot, which somewhat improves that spot offensively, and had Kevin Biggio play right field. And instead you have to bring Paul DeJong into a different spot because you have to replace George Springer and empty your bench entirely. And obviously unfortunate as well that you couldn't bring Danny Jansen or Alejandro Kirk into a pinch hit spot. Danny Jansen starting today, but had to leave because you had to bring Kirk in defensively after he was hit by a pitch.
Boy, Danny Jansen, real quick, like, taken out of the game again after getting hit by a pitch. Like, it just, he has gotten so beat up as both a hitter and a batter. Cause as a hitter, he's been hit a couple of times by, I think this is the third time he's been hit by a pitch, or fourth time he's been hit by a pitch.
He's been hit by a pitch in one of his forearms in three straight series.
That's wild.
Boston, Cleveland.
And he's gotten clipped on the hand and on, like, on his mask and stuff a couple times.
Yeah.
Just when he's regularly behind the plate. So just a lot of wear on that body. We'll see if John Schneider has anything to say. It might've just been a precautionary thing because he was still dealing with the forearm inflammation when he got late scratched a couple of days ago. So we'll have to see if there's anything new on that. Perhaps not, but the injury luck for him, gosh, just completely, like, on things that are completely out of his control, I should say, is rotten. So I think everyone certainly here and anywhere else, hoping for the best for Danny Jansen. You know, I wanted to read, just real quick, before we go to the phones, I see a number of texts on Paul DeJong. And okay. I just wanted to get to Paul DeJong real quick, just because you and I have discussed this idea before. So Jordan from Saskatoon says, if DeJong continues to struggle at the plate, what's the likelihood of bringing up someone like Horowitz, Martinez, or Addison Barger? And then John from North York, explain why we traded for DeJong, just taking up a roster spot, maybe another kid like Horowitz or Barger might give the team a spark.
And none of those guys play shortstop.
And that's the thing.
That's, like, the quick answer for you.
Barger, I could maybe see it with Barger. Perhaps,
I'd still be surprised.
But you're right. Like,
positional versatility in the minors doesn't always mean what it would mean at the majors. Like, you throw guys in spots in the minors. It's not about winning every night.
I do kind of wonder, you know, if DeJong continues to struggle. And I mean, Espinal started this game at short, and after he was pinch hit for by Kevin Biggio, and then all the fracas happened at the end of the game there, they kind of had to make different changes. And so in the end, Paul DeJong had to come in anyways. But it's kind of interesting, right? Because ultimately, if Paul DeJong does continue to not hit, I mean, you and I talked about how he was just going to be the backup shortstop in a defensive capacity when Bo comes back, but we're still a little bit of ways away from Bo coming back. Schneider had said before the ball game that Bo is... will not be activated when he is first eligible to be activated, which I think is this weekend. Still some lingering soreness, tenderness there in the knee. So he might be waiting a teensy bit longer, maybe not that much longer, but a couple of days off coming next week might mean you might maybe some more time for Bo to get right, which is always a good thing, right? They've used the words best case scenario when it comes to Bo, so you can't be can be upset about that. But, you know, even before then, I mean, like, I do kind of wonder if maybe we kind of thought maybe it was a fait accompli that Espinal would be sent down to the minors. Maybe it's not, perhaps, at this point.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, I still don't know that Espinal has done, like, much more than DeJong. He does come up with an RBI single today. It was kind of a blooper. And at the end of the day, do I think that they ideally wanted to trade for Paul DeJong? Like, probably not.
Right.
Why wouldn't they have done that in the Yenesis Cabrera deal or the Jordan Hicks deal if they really wanted to? They had their shortstop go down the eve before the deadline. I know everyone was clamoring for Tim Anderson, who not only went down to the mat recently, but is hitting 242 with a 573 OPS. Like, he's been terrible this year, well before he got suspended for 6 games. And apparently is, like, this is not my words, but there's all sorts of reports about the White Sox clubhouse. So
some crazy
and
stuff. Honestly.
And he's the leader of the team. So take that what you will. But yeah, do they need him to hit better? Absolutely. DeJong's a better defender than Santiago Espinal for sure. And when Bo comes back, neither of whoever it would be would play. I think that there would be a higher chance that Ernie Clement or Leo Jimenez would get a shot. Like, those guys play short.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see, like, Aurelvis Martinez just got to AAA. Addison Barger, I really think, does not play short much at all.
Third and second, probably.
Little corner outfield, but again, like, you really sometimes just throw guys around in the minors because you're trying to see if they can play something. Like, they've played Aurelvis Martinez at short, but it hasn't gone very well. And playing major league shortstop is not easy. And only if you hit like Bo Bichette did last year can you do it while not playing it very well and help your team out. Now Bo is playing it pretty solid and he's hitting, and that makes him an incredibly elite player. But yeah, it's not ideal. They need him to hit better. But they didn't trade for him, I think, because they were like, Paul DeJong's going to flip this offense.
Yeah.
You know, they traded for him because they needed a shortstop. Their shortstop got hurt.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Jim calling in from Brooklyn. Jim, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
How are you?
Good. Well, you know, it could be better, but welcome to the show.
I guess I just want to clarify one thing.
Yeah.
I heard the guys on TV, those in the studio and yourself all say you're not sure what George Springer said when he got tossed. He had turned his back, he had stopped talking, and he kind of flipped off the umpire with his right hand, kind of say, like, get lost. That's what got him tossed. Who cares what he said? They all say the same thing, right? So I'm not sure why people are trying to figure out what he said. He got tossed because he told the umpire, not, you know, just flip them off. I want to watch my language here, right?
So, we appreciate that.
Is that not fair? Right?
First of all,
everybody has said they're trying to figure out what Springer said. Who cares what he said? They all say the same thing, which is not very nice stuff.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. It appeared to me, and look, I haven't gone back and watched the walk away. It appeared to me like he was still talking, and it appeared to me like he more put his hand up in the air, like open hand,
yeah,
than
it
that
kinda,
he
it made me,
flipped anyone off.
Yeah.
I mean, you might say that he did that in exchange for not flipping him off and that he just threw his hand in the air.
That was kind of like, ah, like he kind of throws his hands up in disgust. But
I thought it more had to do with something that he was saying. And I do think that there is a degree. They're certainly always not being nice pretty much to them. No one turns around. They're like, fantastic call. That was awesome. And I'm just frustrated that I struck out. No one ever says that. Occasionally they ask if it's like, you know, was that the top of the zone? Absolutely. Or was that a ball or a strike if I had swung or not? But to me, it seemed like he was saying something and that's what got him tossed out. But I think the main reason everyone's saying they don't know what happened is because we don't want to speculate. I wasn't on the field. And we haven't heard anything from Jeremy Rehak or John Schneider or George Springer, as far as I know.
Well, speaking of that, that's what you call a great segue, Ben.
Yeah.
We do have a little bit of John Schneider speaking to the media. Here's what the manager had to say following both he and George Springer getting ejected just about an hour ago.
You know, umpiring's hard, and, you know, it's a close pitch, probably down. You know, Jeremy's been a really good umpire for a while. I just didn't like the way that he threw George out. You're taking. One of our best players, one of the best players in baseball out of the game, and didn't think anything that George said or did warranted an ejection. And, you know, it's always unfortunate when players can't ultimately decide the outcome of the game.
Now, look, we obviously still don't know what was said, but I would like to think that even though he is being diplomatic, that John Schneider did hear what George Springer was saying, because he was kind of yelling it at the right by the dugout, and the plate's pretty close to the dugout, of course. So I don't know. I mean, certainly maybe there could be an aspect of, you know, taking it with a grain of salt, but I don't know. I choose to take what John Schneider said and choose to take him at his word. And if that's the case, then I don't know. It's a bit of a baffling way for that entire incident to end. I do understand Schneider getting tossed, because I almost feel like he had to at that point based on the exchange. Because you could actually see him when he was leaving the plate area, the home plate area. He turned and you could clearly say stop to George Springer, because
Springer came back out, and you don't want him to get suspended.
No, exactly.
That's a huge deal.
But I choose to take Schneider at his word.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part. I don't think he was going to be like, you know what, I think that was a very well-timed ejection. But yeah.
he did start by saying, umpiring is hard, which I think was kind of like preface the whole thing.
It seems like his issue was more with the hook.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jim was talking about, to be fair, than with the pitch. So who knows? Again, like it's hard for us to know if it was a quick hook or not without having all the mics and all the views and everything that was going on down there. If he threw him out because he threw his hand up in the air, yeah, it's probably a quick hook. It's also the fourth game I went to look. First of all, he is right that Jeremy Rehak, for the most part, is graded as a pretty solid umpire. It's the fourth game that Jeremy Rehak has umpired at the plate for the Blue Jays specifically this year, which is a good amount.
Sure.
And you do wonder too, like, sometimes there's buildup in these things. These guys all know each other, so it is hard to tell what happened, but it's really unfortunate regardless of whether something was said that shouldn't have been, or whether a hook was given out too early, or whatever it was. It's really unfortunate, regardless, for the Blue Jays that they weren't able to bring up George Springer with two outs down one in that game.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Johnny from the West Coast. Johnny's in Vancouver. Welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, what's up?
Oh, I was just thinking that imagine if Schneider came through with a big hit today, how many more mustaches will we have seen at the ballpark tomorrow?
Probably a lot, I would imagine.
Just so many.
I think there still might be some. But I got a point to make here. I think we have to get past the point of waiting for an offensive breakout, and it's time to accept this team for what it is. And I think the identity of this team is just that we're a low-scoring team that relies on pitching to win. You can't look at the names on the back of these jerseys and think about their past success, you know, because each season is different. Guys age, guys regress, and the pitching you face is different. So you got to establish your identity every season. And unfortunately, identity this year is not a good one offensively. And it's probably problematic to expect to be really good and then not deliver, because it leads to bad approaches at the plate. So, and players start to press. What we do need to do is to kind of lean into our identity and just try to have better at-bats, especially with runners at third and less than two outs. We can't even get a simple sack fly to tie a game. So, you know, I think we should have won this series, but given how banged up we are, I'll take a 2-5 road trip, and I hope we can hold off the Mariners. Thanks.
Hey, Johnny, appreciate the call. 5-2 road trip, just so we...
yeah, 2-5, oh my goodness,
that'd be way
worse.
Holy. But I understand what Johnny's saying, but I do appreciate his point about the transition from the days, which is not that far removed for us even, Ben, the idea that the team is, even as recently as 2021 and frankly last year, wasn't that far removed from seeing a ton more of offense, and you kind of felt like they were able to break through in big moments. And today, even if you just focus on today's ball game, bases loaded twice, and you don't feel like you get too much out of it, especially the bases loaded situation in the seventh inning, right? Like they get the game within one with no outs, and then of course Springer gets ejected, a shallow fly out from Kirk, Davis Schneider strikes out swinging. And like Johnny said, if perhaps, I don't know if we're like all the way on the other side of the Davis Schneider conversation, because you and I were doing Jays Talk when he was hitting very, very well in Boston against the Red Sox. But, you know, you kind of knew it was going to even out a little bit here for Schneider, and there's still a lot of runway left for him this season. But it is tough to continually, even if you do accept the fact that this is a pitching and defense team, which I think they are, but it is tough to kind of continually watch them scuffle with runners in scoring position, because you feel like they can do so much better.
Yeah, I mean, it is funky that they end up, you know, going 5-for-13 with runners in scoring position today, which is a .384 average, which is very solid. They didn't get some of the hits when they needed them the most. But, I mean, to start that seventh inning, they did have double with a man on third, single with a guy on second. And then still, I mean, we won't talk about this that much because, it, you know, they should have converted anyway. But Like, Jose Tena won this game for the Cleveland Guardians in the seventh inning. Matt Chapman hits a ground ball deep in the 5-6 hole in between third and short. And Tena races over a rookie in his second game, first ever start, and makes a really phenomenal play on that ball.
It looked like it was
getting into left. Yeah. If it gets into left, because it wasn't hit super hard, like, Farster's scoring for sure, pretty much. And then it's a 4-4 game, and we're probably talking, I don't know, more about like Alek Manoah or something instead of runners in scoring position. Or maybe we're talking positively. Maybe they ended up winning the game. Who knows? But, they do need to hit better with runners in scoring position at least a little bit. It's one of those things where I think you will drive yourself crazy thinking about it so much, because as much as I think people want to add rhyme or reason to it, there is, like, the majority of baseball history suggests that there is not a ton of rhyme or reason. A lot of the guys we think of as the most clutch don't necessarily have the best numbers with runners in scoring position and in those situations are as good as we thought. It is a pitching and defense team, though. I went and looked back at it. The last 2 years, the Blue Jays were a top five team in runs scored, and they were much more middle of the pack in terms of ERA. They are, coming into today, the best team in baseball in ERA, and they are much closer to middle of the pack, maybe a little bit below that, in terms of runs scored. And we talked about it. I don't think it makes a more entertaining product day to day. I do think it gives you a better chance to make runs in the playoffs. And I think that they were supposed to be better than this regardless.
Sure.
I think they knew they might not be a top five team offense.
Yeah, I'm on board.
I think they're supposed to be better than this. Yes, baseball changes a lot year to year. They've unfortunately had multiple guys that were really important have steps back. I don't think Matt Chapman is one of them. His name gets brought up a lot. His numbers mostly better than last year, but like Vlad and George and Kirk and Espinal. Yeah. I mean, these are all guys that had steps back. Varsho had a big step back from his production last season in a tougher ballpark to hit in. But if you look at the teams that prevent runs, they're for the most part in a better spot than the top teams that score runs, which is a little bit random. There are some bad or lesser teams. Like the LA Angels have been scoring runs and not allowing them for a while. It has not worked out. So
that's Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Let's take a very quick break, Ben. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line, back to the phone lines as well. Still got to get to the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. And I do want to have the conversation about Alek Manoah with you, because we haven't talked a lot about Manoah so far today. A middle of the road, perhaps start, an okay start, perhaps not a great start. So very interested to have that conversation on the other side of the break. You're listening to Jays Talk. Sho and Ben with you for a couple more minutes on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, it's just walks, right? It's walks, you know, especially bottom of the order, you know, that come around to score. I think it was a 4-pitch walk to Laureano to start that inning, too. Just got to be in the zone. When he's in the zone, he's good. And, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of hits, but I think when you're putting unnecessary guys on base, you know, they steal third as well. It's, you know, you put yourself behind the eight ball.
That is Blue Jays manager John Schneider discussing the start from Alek Manoah today. An okay start, perhaps at best. An okay start from Manoah.
You're being a little nice.
But maybe I just find it hard to pin it all on Manoah, given that the Blue Jays only scored 3 runs. But at the same time, it is still something we have to talk about. Before we get back to the text line, the phone lines, and to chat about Alek Manoah, real quick, Ben, time for the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet, and you can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19 plus. Play responsibly, Ontario only. The rest of the American League East, I believe, will get into action. Not the Yankees, they're off today, but the rest of the teams will get into action a little bit later on in a couple of hours. The Baltimore Orioles actually are already done their game. They did win the final game of their series against the Houston Astros by a final score of 5-4. They managed to hold on. I think it was 5-3 late. Astros did tally a one run to pull it within one, but Orioles held on for the 5-4 win. So with the win, the Baltimore Orioles are 71-44. The Tampa Bay Rays, prior to their action today against the St. Louis Cardinals, they are 69-47. Toronto with the loss, they are 65-52. The Boston Red Sox, they are taking on the Royals. They are 59-55 before play today. And the Yankees, who are not playing today, they will take on the Marlins tomorrow. They are 59-56. They're a half game back. So that's how the division stacks up right now. And if I take a look at the wild card race, Ben, the Astros still a game and a half up in the second spot in the wild card race on the Blue Jays. Blue Jays still maintain that third spot, and the Seattle Mariners a game and a half back. They are 62-52. So they play, I believe they're off tonight, but play the Baltimore Orioles tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be a real interesting series. It's, you know, I like to think that those are series that are good for your team when two teams, you know, maybe one you're chasing and one that's chasing you are going up against each other. Because if you win, it's awesome. You're either going to create some space or catch someone. But if you lose, not very good.
I see a couple of texts here on the text line, Ben, because we want to talk about Alek Manoah with you. Ali says, Manoah needs to go back down for a longer period. His stuff is just flat or off. And his final line today, 4-plus innings, because he came back out for the fifth, did not record an out, gave up another run, and ultimately gives up two runs because an inherited runner comes in to score with Yenesis Cabrera. But
yeah,
4-plus innings, 4 hits, 4 runs, all of which were earned, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts on 93 pitches. And like he was struggling to find the strike zone in the first 2 innings. Like, he was having a tough time just locating most, if not all, of his pitches. He walked those 3 guys. Innings 3 and 4, he started to find it again despite that elevated pitch count. In the 5th inning, though, he got hit pretty hard. And like we said, he got removed. The Blue Jays down 3-1, ultimately 4-1. Runner on second, still with no outs, coming in to score. Like, even taking in the balance of that Boston start the last time out, Manoah, I think, Ben, is, for me at least, has just been like the balance of everything since being recalled pre-All-Star break has just been okay. But kind of to Ali's point, I don't know if being like just okay is good enough. Unfortunately, there was another texter, and I apologize, I lost the name here, but there was a question about like if Manoah continues to struggle and Ryu pitches well on Sunday and he is scheduled to make a start against the Cubs, like, is there a conversation for Manoah being sent down and Ryu being the 5th starter if they do go away from a 6-man rotation?
I think so. We talked about it on the Fan 590 pregame show. I'm at least not a believer that they're going to 6-man rotation for the rest of the season.
Right.
They had a 17-17 stretch. They have some injuries right now on the Penn side anyway, so they have the opportunity to do this and really help their starters out who have been taxed for a lot of the season because of the time with the 4-man rotation and just how well they've pitched, that they've pitched deep into games. I think that you don't, like, you can only have a certain number of pitchers. So by having a 6th yeah. starter, you take a guy out of the bullpen. I think you want as many guys in this loaded up bullpen
yeah.
as possible, especially when Jordan Romano and Trevor Richards are healthy. And then if Chad Green, if things go well, obviously got hit by that throwback in the head, but let's say things are going well in a couple of weeks, you might want him back too. So I really think that Ryu and Manoah, despite the fact they're quite good friends, are in a bit of competition against each other right now. We had talked about Manoah probably needing to dominate against a poor team like this today, and he was far from dominant. And yeah, if Ryu is healthy, if he looks even close to what he looked like in game one of this series on Sunday and can keep them in games, I think he does have a very good shot, especially given the fact Manoah's young. He has options. I think it's an easier pill to swallow and something you can work with better, at least until rosters expand in September.
Much like Jose Berríos last year, Ben, I don't believe the stuff is just gone. It's not gone for Manoah. I'm not entirely convinced it's a problem that can be solved before the end of the regular season in 2023.
To get back to the point where he was last year, certainly, I don't believe that. I mean, I did think when he came up, maybe you could get like 4.5 ERA ball out of him, but they have not really gotten that so far. They have gotten some bad starts, and he didn't lose them the game today, mostly because the bullpen put together 5 innings of no run ball, and Cabrera inherits a runner on second with nobody out. That scores.
Yeah.
If David Schneider fields it cleanly, and it's not totally on him either, but if he fields it cleanly, that run doesn't come in. The bullpen was really good today, but you can't put that on the bullpen that often and expect them not to surrender runs, especially against better teams.
It is. I do actually kind of think it is a testament that in 2 games of this series, you basically only get 4 innings out of 2 of your starters. Manoah certainly today, 4-plus innings, and I think it was 4 1/3 for Ryu in the first game of the series. But like, given all of that, and Jordan Romano and Trevor Richards on the IL still, and Chad Green has still not been added to this bullpen, that's a pretty good way to look at the bullpen given how well they've played.
Yeah, I mean, you got a 7-pitch inning and a Bowden Francis today. You continue to get strong innings out of Tim Mesa. Jimmy Garcia's stuff looked really nasty today. The bullpen is one of, you know, the few positives I think you take away from this game, and a big positive I think you take away from the road trip and the series overall.
That is Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Thank you for listening, of course, to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. New and used vehicle prices are rising and inventory is scarce. Avoid the hassle of buying prematurely by making your vehicle last longer with Crown Rust Protection. For a special summer offer on rust protection, visit crown.com today. For Ben Shulman, Ben Wagner, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. We're out of here, Ben, because Blair and Barker are next to continue your post-game coverage. They'll also have Jays Talk tomorrow to start the series against the Cubs. You and I are back on Saturday for a Jose Bautista's induction to the level of excellence. I hear you've already carved out one of those bobbleheads.
Oh, I'm looking for it. Really, really trying to make sure I get one. That should be a ton of fun. One of my favorites ever, so yeah. It'll be great.
I am very much looking forward to doing the pre- and post-game show with you on the weekend. That is Ben Shulman. So again, for Ben, for Wagner, for LaRue, for Young, for Blackmore, I'm Show. Enjoy the rest of post-game coverage with Blair and Barker. They're next. We'll talk to you later.